Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Monday afternoon, March 31st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Fast food is among the areas that may be tariff-proof. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the packed week ahead on Wall Street includes President Trump's sweeping tariffs set to take effect on Wednesday and Friday's government jobs report for March. Joining us with a preview is Tom Hudson, financial journalist based in Miami. Tom, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like we have had a number of tariff ultimata over the past 2.5 months or so. There is a deadline. There is rhetoric that tariffs will be imposed on some nation or some particular good from a particular country. And then at the last minute, it's pulled back. So what is going to happen on April 2nd if President Trump follows through on his threat to impose tariffs? What countries are we talking about? What goods are we talking about?
So what the president has dubbed Liberation Day is directed toward what the White House calls reciprocal tariffs. So what does that mean exactly, Rob? Well, according to the White House, what that means is the United States would put tariffs on goods coming from countries that have their own tariffs or some kind of trade barrier for U.S. products getting into those foreign markets. So this is not a surgical strike for China, Mexico, Canada, as we've seen already over the past couple of months. This is global in nature. And any country that has a tariff, which we could quantify, or a trade barrier, not sure what exactly that definition is for the White House, those countries and those products could see the so-called reciprocal tariffs coming up this week.
What are the odds of us actually seeing a follow through come Wednesday? Because the tariff can has been kicked down the road a number of times, and analysts have said that they believe that a lot of these tariff threats are merely negotiating positions and not exactly policy. So how do we suss out what's going to happen later this week?
It is darn near impossible, Rob, I think. And that is part of all of this uncertainty that investors have tried to price into expectations. You know, this back and forth, I was just going through the calendar. It goes back to February 3rd. February 3rd, we're talking 2 months now of this can being kicked down the road, being stomped on, being, you know, the dents pounded out of it. You know, it's gotten rusty, it's gotten polished, you name it, it's seen everything. And this back and forth is what wears on investors, it wears on company executives, and it really wears on consumers, which, as we know, is at the heart. They are at the heart of this economy. 70% of the economy here are consumers, and they have said loudly and clearly that they are worried about their short-term financial future.
And if that's not enough to make you nervous, we do have the jobs report for the month of March coming out on Friday. Now, the claims for first-time unemployment benefits, even now with all of this uncertainty, does not reflect elevated layoffs. So what can we expect to see come Friday?
Yeah, it doesn't. And expectations are for another month of decent job growth. 140,000 new jobs, I think, is the expectation, kind of the median expectation for economists and analysts, which is, you know, it's not a blockbuster number. It's not a hand-wringing, worrisome number. It's a decent number. It's a Goldilocks, you know, not too hot, not too cold. For the Federal Reserve, it gives the Fed, frankly, more patience that it does not have to cut interest rates and hopes that inflation will cool off in the months ahead, despite what the president and the White House seem to want to do when it comes to imported goods and services into the U.S., which is to make them more expensive.
Tom Hudson, financial journalist based in Miami, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, why fast food chains may be in a position to avoid the tariff wars. We'll explain that next.
Money Talks, as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Fast food stocks like McDonald's may offer investors a safe haven from President Trump's tariffs. Joining us to explain is R.J. Hadavi, head of analytical research at the Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. He joins us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home. R.J., thank you for joining us today. And when it comes to the world of global trade and tariffs and tariff wars that we could see starting on Wednesday, what makes a fast food company and fast food stock an attractive safe harbor?
Yeah, really, there's two factors, Rob, that come into play here. First, particularly the large global quick service restaurant chains like McDonald's, Yum! Brands, and others, generally speaking, have more bargaining power at their suppliers. Generally speaking, they're going to get the best prices possible. So even in a situation of a tariff war, they're going to end up getting the best prices for inputs, which should certainly help them out here, certainly relative to a lot of the smaller independent chains. The other factor, too, is that these companies really do rely on global supply chains. So if we do start to see tariffs impact certain regions of the world, they can always diversify to other areas that aren't subject to tariffs as well. So I think that we're looking at a situation right now where there's a lot of uncertainty, but at the same time, a lot of the global quick service restaurant chains are in a good position to weather this volatility.
Yeah, I don't think we really appreciate the degree to, like, just the sheer size of the biggest of the big quick service restaurant chains. And obviously, we talk about McDonald's being a global brand, not only in the U.S., but they also have restaurants in countries all over the world. But over the course of its history, McDonald's was such a voracious consumer of ground beef and chicken and potatoes. It basically bent the agriculture industry to its will. I mean, that's how large of a company we're talking about in terms of McDonald's and the pricing power, as you point out, it has.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there has been cases in the past where when McDonald's is launching a new product, they're so large that it takes a longer time than others to get that much supplies. I think there was a blueberry dessert that they had once upon a time that it took them longer than expected to roll out just because they are that large, and to get that much supply, it takes a little bit longer than most chains to do that. But at the same time, too, again, they've built out this great supply chain, this global situation where they'll be able to diversify in their situations where things may get more costly. So I think it puts them in a good position. And McDonald's, obviously is a very strong brand too. It's one that people flock to in times of economic uncertainty. And I think that also puts them at a nice advantage, particularly as they start to accentuate value and as well as innovation too. They've done a good job. And we've discussed some new product innovations and approaches to marketing in the past. I also think that gives them a nice sustainable advantage in this environment.
At the same time, though, you do have some chains. I mean, let's just use Chipotle as an example. They do have some exposure to the avocado market, and we've talked about how that could be particularly volatile. That could be the avocado, the simple avocado, RJ, could be caught in the crossfire of a trade war. But above and beyond that, you do have a lot of tech behind the scenes. You have a lot of equipment. You have a lot of tech infrastructure to solve app-based ordering. How do tariffs on manufactured goods impact the ability to set up a kitchen or possibly find replacement parts?
Yeah, you got a point there, Rob. It's a situation where we could see a lot of the restaurant chains who are already starting to adopt technologies across the board, whether it be consumer-facing technologies in terms of mobile ordering and kiosk ordering, loyalty programs, things like that, or back of the kitchen in terms of food prep, chip making, avocado making, things like that. Increased prices, and certainly any restaurant operator will tell you that it's gotten more expensive to operate a restaurant, whether that's increased food costs, whether that's increased labor costs. It's more costly, and this is why we started to see this accelerated adoption of technology. But certainly we could see even greater adoption with some of the new tariffs that could be coming into play. So I think that could be interesting to see, and maybe another way that some of these chains use technology to offset increased costs in the years and months and years ahead.
RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, the value of dividend stocks in a volatile market.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
When markets get jittery, there's nothing wrong with sticking to boring dividend stocks. Joining us to discuss why that can be a good strategy is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Find them online, horizoninvestment.com. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And dividend stocks, they used to have a name for them. They were called widows and orphan stocks. And that may be an antiquated name, but is that still a term that's still thrown around in the financial community?
Well, to a lesser extent it is, but I think the premise of that statement is that they do provide a bit of a shelter in the storm during chaotic markets. And, you know, dividend stocks do that for a number of reasons. One, dividend stocks as a group tend to tilt toward the value camp. And you know, what we're seeing in the market here is really a continued rotation out of some of the really kind of hotsy-totsy stocks that led the market into more kind of value plays. And that plays into the strength of dividends. The second factor why they benefit is that, you know, you have that dividend yield in there providing returns, so you're not solely dependent on price appreciation. And that's helpful during kind of down in chaotic markets. And then finally, dividend-paying stocks as a group tend to be a bit more sensitive to interest rates. And so if you see rates falling or expectations of rates falling, perhaps due to a softening economy, that works to the advantage of dividend-paying stocks. So, yeah, they do provide a bit of a shelter in the storm, and we've been seeing that here with the performance. Well, today's a perfect example. You have, you know, the Dow Jones Industrial Average tends to kind of favor dividend payers, tends to kind of favor value stocks, and that's an index that's up today when the rest of the market is struggling here.
And some of the names in dividends include Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, McDonald's, Walmart, ExxonMobil, Chevron. Now, do you have to buy those individual stocks if you want to take advantage of the dividends they provide? Or can you just invest in a dividend ETF?
Well, you can do it both ways. Obviously, a dividend ETF will give you a bit more diversification across a large number of dividend paying stocks. But if you want to do something such as, and we've talked about before, the dogs of the Dow strategy, which invests in the 10 highest yielding stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average and do that individually, you can do that as well. And by the way, the dogs of the Dow have had a nice move here this year, especially during a down market. So that's just one more example of how dividend stocks have been paying off here in this kind of chaotic market we have.
Now, I feel like we have three classes of people who will listen to this segment and respond in different ways, because there are the people who actively play the market on a daily basis. There are others who are active investors, but aren't nearly, you know, an ins and outs kind of person. And there are just those of us who have retirement funds and are just trying to save money and find growth in savings for other goals in life. So if you are in that latter category, how do you approach this? How do you approach this volatility? Do you just don't look at any balances until things start to calm down?
Yeah, I think that what you do is look at what your typical long-term asset allocation is. And, you know, maybe in a bear market, which we think this is a bear market, you kind of trim that a little bit. But let's say, for example, you're a long-term investor with kind of that sleep at night allocation of, you know, 60% stocks, 40% bonds and money markets. You know, maybe you knock the equity portion down maybe 10 to 15 percentage points just to take some change at the margin, and also, you know, raise a little bit more cash to put to work if stocks are cheaper. If you're somebody who's more of kind of a day trader, or you're on the short-term basis, you're really playing this volatility, so you're darting in and out, and good luck to you on that, because it's very difficult to do successfully, at least in my opinion. But yeah, you know, for a long-term investor, sometimes you don't make too many adjustments other than at the margin here.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, thank you for joining us today. Find him online at horizoninvestment.com.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
This is Nancy Hardy. The Chicago Teachers Union prepares to vote on a tentative deal with CPS.
The U.S. military is updating the disappearance of four soldiers in Lithuania. Students and grads seeking summer jobs need to get moving immediately. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a pair of suggestions from an investing pro. WBBM Business. The markets are mixed. The Dow is up 82 points. The NASDAQ is down 219. The S&P 500 down 25. We have 36 degrees right now in Chicago under cloudy skies. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, leaders of the Chicago Teachers Union are expected to vote today on a tentative contract with the city's public schools. The details from WBBM's Nancy Hardy.
The rank and file of the union could ratify the proposal if the CTU's big bargaining team and executive board approve it today, and the House of Delegates votes on it on Wednesday. If the terms are approved, this would finally bring to an end almost a year of negotiations. CPS leaders say they were pleased with the progress that's been made, and their goal has always been to reach a fair contract while being mindful of the budgetary limitations and fiduciary responsibilities. Nancy Hardy, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
There's a sad outcome to the disappearance of members of the American military overseas.
6 days after four U.S. soldiers went missing in Lithuania, three have been found dead. Recovery efforts continue for the fourth. Earlier today, their armored vehicle was pulled from a body of water. The four were on a tactical training exercise in the east of the country near the border with Belarus when they were reported missing last Tuesday. Elaine Cobb, CBS News.
It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are mixed today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director with Clearstead Advisors based in New York. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And how do you interpret what's going on today in the financial markets? Because we do have the increased tariffs on schedule for Wednesday. And it looked like, just based on futures market activity last night, that we were poised for a big sell-off today that is yet to happen. So how can you explain investors' behavior today?
Well, you are getting a continued sell-off in the technology and growth sector of the market. You're getting a little bit of support from the defensive sectors of the market as people position themselves for a possible slowdown or recession in the economy. So that would explain why the Dow is doing better than the NASDAQ. And I think for the markets in general, it's a wait and see. Today's Monday, and on Wednesday, you're going to start to get the facts on the tariffs. So there's no point in making a big position one way or the other ahead of Wednesday. But what I would say over the weekend is you had major firms such as Goldman Sachs decrease their estimate for GDP growth for the year, increase their estimate for inflation. And if growth is going to come in less than expected and inflation higher than expected, it's likely that estimates for corporate profits are a little bit high. So I think that, and what investors are waiting for, is to see what the tariffs are on Wednesday. You get some payroll data, which will measure the economy on Friday. And then next week we roll into earnings season. So you're probably more in a quiet sideways move until we get some more facts.
Also, there is a non-zero chance that we can get to Wednesday, and then once again, there will be a message on Truth Social saying that we had a breakthrough in negotiations with countries X, Y, and Z. They have agreed to do X, Y, and Z. Therefore, the new date is June 2nd or something like that.
I think that's highly likely that this is going to be a rolling conversation between April 2nd and June. But at least on April 2nd, you'll start to get the facts. And then as the facts become more apparent and codified and solidified between April and June, that should allow the market to gauge how they're going to affect the economy, profits, and inflation. And hopefully, if all that falls into place, the back half of the year should be better than the beginning of the year.
Now, we do have analysts continually revising down first quarter gross domestic product, and with the end of the quarter coming this week, tomorrow, as a matter of fact, it's today.
Right.
Look at the time. We'll have the first estimate on first quarter GDP. Now, there were several quarters in 2022 where the first read was contraction. So how do we react if that first read on first quarter GDP GDP is flat or even a negative number?
I think at this point, expectations are very modest. You've already had the reductions in estimates. The Atlanta Fed, X the gold, which affects the number, is down 0.5. Goldman Sachs is up 0.5. Several other people are at about one. So I think that will be a rear-looking number. And I think what's going to be more important is what corporations say about forward-looking numbers and estimates for profits and growth as they report earnings during the month of April.
Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director, Clearstead Advisors in New York. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next, now is the time to search and apply for summer jobs.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
High schoolers and recent grads should start now to pursue summer jobs. From resumes to referrals, parents can play an important role in helping them succeed. So let's get some tips from Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And the surest sign that spring and summer job season is here, not just around the corner, but here, the local Dairy Queen, Rick, in my corner of Northwest Suburbia, opened a couple of weeks ago. There was a line out the door on Friday night, that especially warm evening. So we're not just talking about summer jobs as a something you tackle in June or July. We are now in spring and summer job season, and they don't necessarily have to be at the local quick service restaurant.
Absolutely don't. You know, this is so looking for work is one of the most difficult things we undertake. So I'm going to give some advice to the parents, having several children of my own that are all adults now with grandkids. And that's have some empathy for how hard it is to go out and find work. And then double that, because the generations that are out there looking for work now are so much more comfortable with the technology as an approach to the market. And that's probably the least effective way of finding work.
Now, a couple of years ago, when we were talking about the spring and summer job market, we were in the middle of the Great Resignation. The job market was white hot. There was a great deal of people jumping ship, and they were able to negotiate all sorts of perks and benefits above and beyond generous pay packages, and that included the spring and summer job. Is that still in play today?
The thing about the summer job is it's bifurcated. Are you looking for work in order to earn some money for the summer and have it be that sort of part-time job that's fun? Or are you looking at something that's going to add value to your future career, whatever that might be? So you have those two separate categories. So if you're looking to work in a company or get an internship at a company, that's still an option. The full-time paid jobs in those companies are probably further and fewer between, because there's less of those. People are less interested in filling gaps. If you're looking for a summer job, that hasn't changed. They're still out there.
Now, when we talk about how younger job seekers are for sure a lot more comfortable with technology, and we have discussed over and over and over again about how if you're looking for a management position or a mid-senior level or senior level job, Indeed or LinkedIn may just be a waste of your time. That is something that you do entirely through human networking. But if you are in college or if you are in high school and you're just going for an entry level kind of thing, is online the place to start?
No, absolutely not. The online systems exist for one thing, and that is to help an organization or an individual hire somebody. But that's like saying, you know, I want to get married and I'm just going to put myself in the system and hopefully somebody will propose to me. The process of hiring is completely disconnected from the process of finding a job. Just the same way that buying a house doesn't mean you automatically get a car in your garage when you buy it. So if you want to find work, you have to go as directly as you can to the places where there are people who could hire you or refer you to somebody that could hire you, and you need to build a system that just has those meetings and those conversations. You will get a job much more quickly, and you will find jobs that nobody else found because they weren't posted, because I didn't even know I wanted somebody until I met you.
And it seems like, you know, we talk about that bifurcated job search. If you are just looking for some money for the summer, just walk into the golf course, just walk to the swimming pool and just see if they have any openings. And that's probably your best bet. But if you are trying to get that career off the ground, I would imagine if you're in college, you just go to a career office and utilize that alumni network to get your foot in the door.
I'm gonna push back on that again too, because the problem with the career office of a university is they have a system that's in place that's institutionalized that doesn't necessarily go out as proactively. This is asking strangers for money in a lot of ways. It's super uncomfortable, but if you want to find a job, you go to the person who has the ability to hire you, and you have a conversation with them about, hey, I'd really like to understand more about what you do, how it works, et cetera. If you're looking to get a job in a company, the same is true. Most of the people that you will talk to in the traditional existing Indeed, human resources, recruiting function, their job is not to find you. Their job is to eliminate all the other people that they don't want to look at as candidates. So you're putting yourself in a filtering situation where the person cannot hire you, but they can say no.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. And still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Stock Picker Monday. Helping us out today is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. Michael, thank you for joining us today. Two selections today, and they look like places where you can seek some shelter in times of volatility.
Good afternoon, Robin. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I picked these two because they're our two largest holdings. And there are two largest holdings because we felt like we needed a hedge against a market that we thought was fully valued. So stocks entered 2025, in my opinion, at least fully valued, or at least 95% of full valuation. So with Trump in the White House saying exactly what he was going to do, but I don't think a lot of people were listening. So, you know, he was saying that he was going to put America first and use tariffs to level the playing field. You may or may not agree with that policy, but that's what he's doing. And that is going to hurt us economically in the short term. So you've got that. You've got talk about Greenland. I don't know how that's going to play out, but it's unsettling to say the least. You have other economic turmoil, international turmoil in Russia, Ukraine, U.S., China. With all these things happening, the one investment that I think is everyone should have just because of times like this is gold. Now, we've chosen to invest in gold by buying GLD, which is an exchange-traded fund, an ETF. It allows investors to buy gold without actually owning the commodity itself. So I've said, and I've been on your show many times saying that investors should have 5 to 15% of their investments in gold and cryptocurrency. But we have chosen to put 15% in gold right now. That's the largest we would ever go in that one investment. But this is the exact time you should own it. And until I see things settling down a bit, and I think that's going to be a ways away, I think gold is going to be our number one investment. So we would suggest to all investors to have at least some of their assets in gold.
And then very quickly, your next selection, another ETF, but this one for U.S. Treasuries.
Yeah, TLT. So it's an out-of-favor asset because people are worried about inflation. But as you can see, it seems like the concern for inflation is waning, and now it's more of a concern about a recession. And when that happens, you want to have U.S. Treasuries. It is the safest bet when it comes to economic downturns. And so right now, that is our second largest investment, and we would say that investors should have some treasuries, especially right now, because the chances of a recession are higher than normal.
Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. Thank you for joining us on this Stock Picker Monday. His two selections, the Spider Gold Trust ETF, that is GLD, and the iShares 20-plus year Treasury Bond ETF.